Okay. All right. No more racial slurs, Maria. We're now
Oh,
live.
yeah,
Oh,
good.
hey guys. What's up?
Why can't you ever? I watched the start of you and Katie's last one as well, and you did the same thing, but once again, you just like you need new material
Yeah, I know.
for
We
the
keep
fake
I
out.
only have like three or four things and like they're not as funny now, so I got to come up with new things we could be doing.
Yeah.
Katie had one once where she was talking about someone she had tied up in the basement, and I thought that was really good because my
That's
deflection
good.
was that we were into BDSM, and like that was like a funny bit. I was like, "Oh, haha, consent." Which was pretty good. All right, guys, this is a channel-wide live stream. That's how we normally start book club live streams, and we go on like that for like 10 minutes, and then me and Katie go on like that for like 30 minutes and eventually get to the point. Hello everyone. We originally this live stream was going to be our review of the Dune movie, because we were all going to see it yesterday and then talk about it this morning and jump on the algorithm, but that ended up not working out. So instead, because I didn't have another video edited because I had planned, we're going to be doing some comment responses because we've kind of fallen behind on those a little bit, which is mostly my fault because I just haven't had time to edit them a lot. And
We've
so we'll
done
just do them
them.
this way. We've done like
Yep.
two.
Those are two they haven't seen, William. Bad
I've actually
William.
thought
Everybody shame William.
if we do like one of these live streams every 2 months, then I can just cut them up if, as long as we get to about eight, and then I can just do
Yeah.
it that way instead of doing them hodgepodge. But okay, so that's what we're gonna be doing. Let's see. Let me. We should be live, I think. We don't have as many people as we normally do, but it is a slow morning. Hey, everybody in the chat. Yeah, 26 watching. That's not bad.
And we didn't
So,
announce it ahead of time, I don't think, like on the channel.
no, I didn't really.
So.
I put it up about an hour ago because I wasn't quite sure what we were gonna. I made that thumbnail in like 3 minutes, so
Didn't
it's pretty
even
good
see it.
though.
Let me go
Yeah,
look.
I just remade. I just used your like face and it's the
Just
same
gonna
one.
go.
It's the same one that I had done for the medieval toilets one.
I know the face of
It's
which you
good. It's
speak.
very sassy. It's very sassy.
It is. It's a good sassy face.
I'm getting better at these thumbnails. The one I made for the Dune one looks really good. And then the one I had done for our original stream idea when Katie was gonna join us is really good, but whatever. We're just gonna, we roll with the punches, guys.
We do roll
Okay,
with the punches.
so if you guys want to leave any questions in the chat as we go, we'll go back and look at those as we go. It doesn't have to necessarily be connected to what we're doing now. This is mostly just like just us talking to you guys. The idea behind the comment responses is that often we get kind of interesting comments about our videos.
Sorry, Data's being real fucking weird.
That's okay.
Can't tell
He's
if he's about to throw up or if he's just vibing.
looking weird. So the idea is that a lot of times we get really interesting comments on our videos, or things that we didn't we kind of talked about, but I kind of would like to clarify more later. And so the idea was that we would just like to take some time to talk through these comments and help people go through them. If there are any comments here that are negative, I think there's one or two, please do not go and harass these people on the videos. Do not go and comment on them. This is not supposed to be like a dunking session. I just did it because I think that it could lead to an interesting discussion. And also because like if I left the comment up, it's a relatively valid comment and it's not rude. If it's rude, I would not have even left it up.
Yeah, and so anything that we've left up, like, just if you want to engage with it genuinely, sure, but maybe not after this video.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, cause it's sometimes I have, cause like the thing is, I like our Discord and our patrons, and so like sometimes I want to share my frustration with a comment with them, or even just like a this is a funny comment, but like I don't like that cult-like behavior that that can engender. So that's like one of the
Oh,
hard rules.
absolutely. I completely agree. It's definitely like there was once where somebody made a comment and it wasn't a great comment, and a lot of some of our patrons and some of just viewers in general who saw the comment jumped on it, and it wasn't terrible, and none of the people who came to our defense do I have any. I just there was a moment where I felt like, oh, this person made this comment probably not with like the worst of intentions, and now has just like on their end, it has to feel like a lot because there was quite a few people, and that doesn't happen often, but it's not like we will just rather delete ones that we have actual issue with, rather than like, yeah, it's rough out here in the interwebs. Be kind to one another.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about canceling is often it's so disproportionate. It's like that woman who, like, there's just a lot of cases where even when the person has done something bad or you would argue with them about it in real life, when you have 30,000 people all telling you that what you did was mildly wrong, it's a lot. And again, I'm always trying to not in it's funny because I would like a cult following, but I'm also always trying to not in engender one, which do you think engendering
You'd
could
like it
be
to, you'd like it to happen naturally. Like it just spring up at no fault of your own. Suddenly people are just following you and worshiping at your
sister
feet. I get
wives?
it. I get it. I get it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Also, do you ever think that engendering is probably like a hate crime nowadays? Because you're engendering, you're creating a gender. So if I did that to somebody, it would be like okay, so first question from the chat is will you read the sequels to Save Your Sister from Gloria Frimpong?
Yes. With joy or looking forward to it? No. But will we do it? Yes. The Save Your Sister was the video that got us monetized. So you have to have a certain amount of watch hours and a certain number of subscribers to get monetized. And that video just went crazy. It's the closest we have ever got, because even by some of our other successes, that video just did like so well so quickly. Like we posted it and like 5 hours later it was just insane. And so
It still
like
remains our main video that people watch. It's that one, the Save Your Sister, one of the ACOTAR ones, and then Iron Widow, weirdly enough, are the ones that do just they do so well.
regularly. And so we're gonna read it because like it helped build this channel, you know?
Well,
And
and also,
what
all
are
of our
we if not
followers want to
glutton?
read it.
Yes, all of our a lot of people, because they found us from it, like they're looking forward to our feedback. Like there are certain, like we've talked about how we don't plan on reading the Iron Widow sequel
Yes.
and some of the other ones that we don't have to, but like we're too in with Maressi's Savior's Sister Champion, whatever the that series is called. We're two in. We might as well go for gold,
Struggle
you know?
through.
Yeah.
No, but here's the thing. I actually have plans because as soon as it gets announced, we're gonna make Katie read the first one and then do a video with her because she never read the original ones. So I don't
Oh,
think
that's
we make her
brilliant.
read the Save Your Sister because that's just painful, but I think the first one, and then we can ride shotgun with her and do another video on that, which
Oh,
would
that
be,
would
I
be
think, a lot of fun.
that's fantastic. And I think she'd have a great time with it. So a couple of people have asked, where's Katie? She's sitting this one out this morning. So originally this was supposed to be, for those of you joining late, this was supposed to be our review of Dune, but due to me getting exposed to COVID, still negative, baby. We decided it was best not to have Will come up, and I didn't want to go watch Dune with a mask on because I wear glasses and it's foggy. And then Katie just ended up having a not great night sleep wise, so she was just like, you guys hold down the fort without me. And we were like, this is the perk of having a channel of three people, because if one of us calls out, the other two can hold it down. Will and I talk about that all the time.
It's so handy. It really is. Like so many times in the last 2 months has it been like you notice that there's gonna be like three or four videos in a row that are just me and Katie because stuff kept coming up. And it, like that's again, that's we have to share money, which I don't love. I have to share it between more employees, but it's it still makes up for it in terms of the versatility of being able to do different things. We're actually gonna be trying to do more too. People videos instead of three ones going forward, just because it'll make it easier for all of us to make it
Yeah.
sustainable. And the discussion can sometimes get when there's three of us, the videos are longer, and that means it takes longer to edit, and they're also kind of exhausting. And so we'll still do three people ones probably at least twice a month for the book clubs, but in between those, it'll be either Katie and Maria or me and Katie or me and Maria.
Yeah.
is probably how we'll do it.
Yeah, and just as far as from a filming standpoint, it is just a little bit easier with the discussion, like in the video,
Yes.
to get your thoughts out with two people. I mean, the three, and we will still do three people videos because people love them and they miss one of us when we are not there. So those are not going away. It'll happen.
I think also when Maria and Katie are in person, it's really funny. So, and they actually live close to each other, so hopefully we'll have more of those. Yeah, so Katie just felt like sitting it out. We're gonna be here. You guys almost got us ranking romantic tropes, but we're gonna save that for another time when there's all three of us. I also had a couple of funny F Mary kills that you will be surprised by, I think.
Oh no. Oh no,
Okay.
is all I can say.
Let's see then. Let's go to the first question. Bah, 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 bah. Oh, okay. So I thought this was a good one. Some of these are, by the way, from videos that I had saved. Usually when we get an interesting comment, I save it in a folder to do comment responses from. Some of these are going to be from that. And then some of these are just from our Discord this morning because I realized I only had like six-ish. And again, if you guys want to want to have questions in the chat, that's also perfectly fine. This one was so they had a couple questions, but the one here I wanted was, are there any books or authors you'd absolutely refuse to read, even for laughs, for the channel? And the answer to that is yes, actually, there's a lot. So one example is recently there's a Draimani, which is a Hermione Draco fanfic that has kind of taken the internet by storm and is very popular, called Manacled, and it's like a super dark, non-conny kind of story or whatever, and I was like, oh, we should do that for the podcast. That would be popular because it's a moment. And then I was like, no, because fanfic exists within, to me, fanfic exists within its own little biome and environment, and like hyper specialized tropes that are different than writing than like a published work. And so it's not really fair for us who is someone who is not part of that fandom or that
Fandom.
ship to go in and like criticize it. So like one of the examples I gave is one of the big ships I like, OTP, my biggest ship. One of the things is that the female character's brother in and Maria knows who I'm talking about, but she's not going to say because for
I will
privacy
say
reasons.
nothing.
Her brother is in the show or book, is like a very stalwart, cool character who's like a very main character. But in the fanfic version, he's always kind of relegated to being the overprotective brother who's a bit of a doofus. And that works within the ecosystem of that ship because you kind of need somebody who, like, that's a fun character and a fun interpretation of the character. But if somebody who wasn't familiar with the tropes of that specific ship went in and read it, they would be like, this is out of character. What's going on here? And so, like, that's the kind of thing.
It's almost it kind of fits into the weird kinky stuff you're into is always like is going to be fine for you and normal for you, but other people's kinks are gonna be gross or weird or just like that's an odd choice. And so I completely agree. I think fandom and things that have because you're right, there was. And I have no shame in admitting this. The only fandom I got into, so brief background as far as fan fiction goes, I have read very little, especially in comparison to the behemoths that are Katie and William, who once tried to have a measuring contest, if you will, of who has read more, which, you know. It's hysterical given the context of why they both read so much fan fiction. But
Which is that we are both very depressed
very
people
depressed people. It
who
was
use it to kind of
literally like
modulate our moods.
whose depression dick was longer? And I was like, okay, guys, you both have very, very impressive ones. Put it away. But I have not. The only like ship I got into, and it's super silly, and it was such a it was Sherlock and Molly from BBC's Sherlock, which you know most a lot of Sherlock shippers are gonna be like, how dare you, John Locke forever, which is fine. I have read John Locke, fan fiction, but it was mainly that. And there was a lot of things within, and the reason I mentioned this is because when I went over to the John Locke fan fiction, characters who consistently in the Sherlolly fandom, as it was referred to, how they were portrayed there were completely different in the John Locke side of things, and like the beats and a lot of the tropes and like the canon, the fanon, if you will, were different for those two ships. And so I agree. I think things that are just fan fiction with the numbers filed off, like they're great if you're into that ship and you're into that fandom and you can appreciate it more. But I think coming in as an outsider, similarly, like it would be like reading a dark romance with non-con, with like with some dubious consent, and that's not your thing. You're automatically just not going to enjoy that versus someone who likes dark romances with dubious consent. They're going to be like, nom nom, this is my candy. And so those
It's
kinds
very
of things.
true. So another example, actually going right to that, is there's a TikTok book that made the rounds called Haunting Adeline, which is a stalker non-con book, and like the book is very clear about that, and yet you have all these people reading it and being shocked that it has stalker non-con in it, and I'm like, guys, like what are you doing? Like this is very clearly it's signaled beforehand. It's not. It's like extra textually signaled that this is not, if you're not into this thing, don't read it. And so there's a certain amount to which it can be fun if the channel like is clear that this is like just their opinion. So we kind of did this with Ice Planet Barbarians a little bit, where it was just like you're just having our reactions. We understand our reactions are not objective in this sense, but it's still fun to have people's reactions to like married purple people or blue people,
Blue people.
pregnant.
I rewatched our first video for that recently. Man, is that a good video. If you have not watched our Ice Planet Barbarians video and you feel like a good laugh, please just go watch it.
That was so funny.
So I saw a question kind of
I had one more th that one more example of a thing that
Oh,
or a book
perfect.
that I wouldn't. Okay, so I don't remember what the author's name is. I think she's the vampire lady, the Lestat vampire lady. But anyway, again, if it's not her, I'm sorry for slander on her name. She rewrote Sleeping Beauty, but as like a very sexy non-con type of a thing. And like looking over it, I was like, oh, this could be really funny. And then I looked over into it more and I was like, this is actually just kind of gross. Like, this would not be funny. There's like some child type stuff in it that's very weird. And I was like, that's just not going to be funny for the channel. Like, it just isn't going to be funny and it's not going to be good.
It's kind of like there's a point at which like Ice Planet's Barbarians is a great example because that was still fun, like, and especially in retrospect, like if you I'd like to apologize to Ice Planet Barbarians formally for some of the slander I threw at it, because again, it wasn't for me. It was in so many ways, it was just not any of the stuff that I enjoy in a and I think I mentioned multiple times, I just prefer when books fade to black. Just do me the favor across the board, just fade. But that book was way easier to read than a lot of the other stuff we've put ourselves through. And
I'm so
you're right,
fond of it in retrospect.
I'm
It's very
so
funny. I
fond of
find
it
it
in
endearing.
retrospect. Please go watch it. They were great. But no, you're absolutely right. We really have to, and that's one of the reasons why, like, we wouldn't do the not that this has to do with like fan fiction, but the Iron Widow sequel, I can't imagine I'm going to enjoy it based on how I reacted to the first one. And that video just got a lot of negative response. And I, number one, I don't want people to be like, you're just poking the bear, and like you didn't like it, and now you're just for views, and like, nah, I will happily let those views just disappear and not get that algorithm hit, because I just don't want to step into that again. And it just, I don't think it would be enjoyable. That book was a little bit like rough,
It
and
wasn't
I
fun. And it's also not well written. I mean, there are examples that like, so another example is like Harry Potter. I would be iffy about reviewing because it's such a cultural hot moment or problematic. So the thing with doing Harry Potter is that A, none of us are that interested in doing it, so we just want to do it. But B, it's a problem where it's like if Hitler wrote a children's series that had nothing to do with race or war or Jewish people. And it's like, okay, the author has said some terrible things, but we actually can't comment on that in the text. And so it gives a
Well,
bit of a
actually,
lopsided feeling.
in retrospect, there's a lot of like problem with
There are a
even the
few
Harry Potter books.
things.
There are a few things where you're like, really? This is the so the I have a I've actually thought about rereading it just to kind of with my adult brain on and my more analytical, because I'm much more analytical as a reader now than I was back when I
You're
first read
welcome.
Harry Potter, which was in third grade. N No, I think a couple of degrees helped between third grade Maria and now Maria. Thank you. It's because I read the first four books when I was in third grade. I would like to like assess kind of my response to it as an adult with kind of some of my context in mind. But it's also something I'm just not really looking to do for the channel. There was a couple of other questions that kind of fit with this. The Mortal Inch so
Crap
crap
entertainment.
and Crap Entertainment. The Mortal Instruments originally started as Harry Potter fan fiction. Would you read those? I think I tried to read the first one back in the day, and it just wasn't for me. And I'm talking about, I think, maybe early college. And I didn't enjoy it. And then at the end of, I think it's at the end of the first book, you find out that the guy that she's been kissing might be her brother. And I was just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's kind of odd, especially when you find out that that author also wrote a Ron and Ginny fan
Specifically because she
fiction.
didn't like Ron. Like it was a revenge thing against Ron, essentially, which is really
It's
funny.
a weird, but anyway, and I went, this isn't my jam. Like, and it could have been because it was at a stage where I was reading a lot of kind of romance YA, and I was on a bit of a tear, and I just really didn't like it.
I wouldn't read it because it's not good. I think the
Yes,
author
that's
isn't very talented, and also that was like her first book, and it's just not very good from what I've read of it. But like, the other problem is it's one of those fanfics. It's one of those books that was a fanfic and just had the serial numbers filed off
filed
without
off.
it being rewritten to work in its own setting. And that's kind of what I'm talking about, like that Manacled fic I was talking about a minute ago. If that was just published as is, that would not work well as a book. You would need to rework a lot of things in it. And from what I understand, Cassie Clare did not do that. She also
Yeah.
plagiarized a bunch. H bomber, putting my H bomber guy hat on.
Guy hat on. So here's another one that kind of fits into the fanfic with traditional publishing pipeline. What are you guys' thoughts on tags and tropes being so heavily used to market traditionally published books at the moment? So I have two kind of sets of thoughts. Number one, I think it is a silly marketing tool because people go in expecting a thing, and so tension is just completely sapped from it. Like, if you start it and you go, enemies to lovers, we know that the guy she hates in the beginning, she's gonna be smoozing by 70% through the book. It just, it like saps some of the tension, and also a lot of people, because the level and so this ties into TikTok and BookTok and BookTube. A lot of people talk about, like, if you love enemies to lovers, read this book, read this book, read this book, and it's beginning to feel like books are being written with those tags and tropes in mind to try hit the algorithm satisfyingly. Like, not only are people trying to get people to read their books, but they're trying to make it big on TikTok and social media to get more eyes on it, because that's how a lot of people are making it now. You know, a lot of BookTubers and BookTok people like end up publishing or in their process of publishing, so they're doing reviews to build a platform so that publishers will even consider liking their work. And so people are grabbing onto these things, and I think it's a little bit of a disservice to like the to like write with a trope in mind instead of like letting a story happen or organically. It also can be misleading. Like, people are using the term slow burn for anything that where like they don't kiss
Get
or
on your soapbox. Put
they
it under
don't
you, Maria.
If they don't kiss until like 70% the way through the book. And I'm like, that ain't a slow burn. That's a lie. Slow burn is where it takes like three books. They don't even think they like each other until the end of the first book, which is why I don't think for Inej and Kaz, Six of Crows was
False
a slow burn.
representation.
It is because they
Fraud.
but they start that book liking each other. Ain't it? Ain't it? But anyway, so I think it can be, I for some people, when they're using it as a like a, oh, I don't like this thing, so I'm going to avoid that book. Like, I guess it can be useful, but I don't know. I think we need to let that go. I think especially like advertising them through those tropes, I think that needs to end.
I think the problem with it is that it is a it's an outgrowth of fandom or fan fiction, where that is much more of a thing, is like you're just going there to scratch a certain emotional itch, and that's fine. But a book, again, has to stand on its own in a way that a fanfic doesn't. A fanfic really can just be like, oh, I'm or we've already done all the world building and the character development. This is just the AU where we get to put on clothes and it's a whatever romance. And the problem with doing that with an original story is that an original story, to be effective, needs to stand on its own legs. And I think there's also, I mean, everything Maria said is correct, but I think there's also an extent to which there's a difference between marketing the tropes in the plot versus like the premise, like the setting. So, like, I think marketing something as like, ooh, Hispanic Second World Fantasy, not a thing that ever happens, but if it was, I think that's different than being like, oh, this is an enemies to lovers. Because one of those really commodifies the relationships of the characters. And what happens then is that it people write with that in mind instead of that being a thing they find out later. And so they're also, I think they start to subconsciously gear those tropes to be the most trope that that is without it coming organically from the characters. And you can see this a lot. And this is not completely new. This has like been happening forever. Like romance books have always been like this to an extent, but it's just happening more now with the tick breakdown of TikTok and BookTube. And I think writing with plot elements like that in mind, again, I think it makes it so that the world feels inorganic and that the characters serve the plot more than the plot serving the
The
characters.
characters, and it, I think commodification is the perfect. Listen, writing a book is you are creating a commodity, like it's part and parcel. But I think the idea of the commodification of the relationships the characters have and the like capital between them, I think is a perfect way of discussing what these tropes and things are doing to traditional publishing. And your experience, like, I don't know, surprise me. I don't want, like, I like starting a book and not knowing which guy she might end up with, you know? Like, I like that. There's a series that is an actual second world Spanish fantasy that won't read.
I will read it now
yeah,
because
I
I
don't
have
actually
grown
know
as
if
a
it's good.
person.
I read it in my 20 early 20s, but I have very fond memories of the whole, especially the second book. It like it did that thing where the second book slapped. The third book wasn't quite as good, but ooh, it slapped. In the first book, the guy she's gonna end up with is she doesn't she know like he's there, but it's not even on the horizon. Like it's not at all. Like you're not like, oh, maybe it'll be this guy. And so then what happens in the second book, you're like, okay, Hakatar. Get it, you know? And it ends up working really well. And
You know,
it
another
surprises
really good
you.
example of this, the ACOTAR series. It's just so good that with
So the ACOTAR series actually highlights one of the other problems. So we want
the
enemies to lovers. We want some, like, we want the bad boy, but like we defang them so quickly. Like there's this thing where we like the dark,
I
broody
fucking
guy.
hate it.
But he's not actually dark nor broody. He just seems that way or has to had to pretend to be that way. But inside, he's actually had a heart of gold the whole time. And we have this thing where we're writing in an age where like we can't be hashtag problematic. So the guy who, you know, in the first book might have been like, I know, Scotch abusive. We're gonna rewrite it and retcon it so that none of that has happened. And he was actually the bad boy with the heart of gold the whole time. And not even a bad boy. He's actually been good boy the whole time. He just happens to wear black.
No, it's so true. I was saying this on the Discord. This doing all of these books, because we just read a lot of girl books for girls, I cannot stand the way that women write male love interests. I just don't like it. It really it this is separate a little bit from what Maria was saying, but it's connected in terms of just the veneer of bitchy darkness instead of actually grappling with like the real toxicity and how that can be interesting.
Absolutely.
A couple of people
So
are
a couple of
mentioning
people,
which, yeah.
what book? I'm trying to remember. The girl had a gem in her
Something in
belly.
Salt.
No, it was. Give me one sec. Answer some questions. I'm gonna go do a perusal.
Haha. Okay, so this is what I think is interesting about Warhammer, and I've talked about this before, is that in a lot of ways, the Mechanicus is not like a science-based organization. They're a religion. And obviously, they say that, right? But it's very interesting because they're working on these things that they don't understand. They're more like librarians in that they're just trying to preserve it. And I think the thing is that, like,
I found
that
it. Let
is.
me put my headphone in. Don't say anything.
I was talking about Warhammer.
Think this
It would
is
have been
good?
funnier, though, if I had been able to find a more interesting topic.
So this isn't the first book. Okay, so the first book is
Hey,
called the
Valerie! Also, Angry Otter showed up.
Oh, hi, Angry Otter. The first book is called The Girl of Fire and Thorns. This is the second book,
Why did
The
I think
Crown
it
of
was
Embers.
salt?
Yeah, I don't know. And now what I will say is this book came out before the blank of blank and blank was a thing. Like
Okay, all
it
right.
was,
Defending its honor.
yeah. And so, and then it's the Crown of Embers, and then I think the Bitter Kingdom is the third book, I think. But anyway, it is a second world, Spanish, Hispanic, thing, and I loved it when I was in my early 20s. As you can see, I bought the hard covers. I will say the covers, meh, real meh. I don't understand what was happening here. But if you're interested, read it. I haven't read it in years. It might be trash. Let me know. I'd love to know. So yeah, it also
No,
I liked it a lot when I was young because the main character is
fat.
bigger, and she does lose some weight in the first book, but she's never skinny. And I was like, I feel that. I feel that. And so I liked it a lot when I was young.
Yeah, we might do it on the channel. I don't know. I again, I'm trying to have us do less YA because I just don't like it. Like, in general, I try to have us only do books that I think we're gonna like outside of the specific roast videos, and it's just I still just don't end up liking a lot of them. And also, for some reason, our book club keeps picking YA books, and so like that's a little bit, whatever. That's the problem with not being Stalin is sometimes the proletariat get a voice. All right, let's see. Were there any that we missed? There's actually, we'll probably at the end ask if there's any questions that we missed throughout the whole thing that you wanted answers to. But until then, are you good to move on to another comment?
I absolutely am. That was a great question. I think we had a really good oh wait, I think there's one good question that I want to do really quick. Where do you think the line is between fan fiction and what's considered literature? Like there's 50 Shades, but then there's Wide Sargasso Sea by Jane Rhys and March by Geraldine. So I actually am not familiar with either of those two second books, and I don't know the like if they were originally fan fiction then turned into literature. I'm not sure, but
There's also one of the Gone with the Wind called The Wind Done Gone, told from the perspective of her half mulatto sister, which I just think is a hilarious name. Like, it's such a funny title. It's great because A, it has like the African American vernacular, but also it's taking this great concept and making it like, nah, it's like a fart. Like, The Wind Done Gone, like, I just love that. I didn't really read the book, but.
I will say that like we have read authors who have come from fan fiction backgrounds. And then I read the Cinder, I forgot what that book's called, the Lunar Chronicles, which I think were originally like Sailor Moon fan fiction. I think.
Tamsin Muir comes from a fanfic background.
And so like and Tamsin Muir is one where I can say that, you know, her work definitely hits like a really high caliber. And I think I think there comes a point where you look at a story and you said, I could have written this without it being fan fiction, but you have to assess whether you can take what you've already written and make it a new thing without the context, or if you just need to rewrite your story. Like keep the similar beats but
Completely.
start. And I think that's the problem. I think if you have something that could be a cool original idea, don't turn it into fan fiction. I think it's going to be really hard to file the things off.
As somebody who's written fanfic, I will say there's There's several fics I have that I love, but I know I would never be able to turn into their own thing, because they rely upon the context of understanding the original work. And I think that's the thing that people sometimes get a little bit like don't quite understand is that like fanfic. So people are like, well, there's fanfic of like, Beowulf or whatever. Like, and it's like, yeah, but everybody understands the context of not necessarily Beowulf, but of a larger thing. And so you can play like Batman can you can do a crossover with Batman as Sherlock Holmes because that's like two things people inherently understand. But a lot of times you're playing with the context of the series. At some point, I'm gonna have us do a story rewrite of the sequel series of Star Wars because I had a story idea for it I really liked, and I would love to be able to make it to its own thing, but it doesn't work because it really relies upon the context of Star Wars. And like you can kind of move it out a little bit because some of Star Wars's tropes are kind of broad and understood, and it actually almost is a piece of pop culture in that way that you can be in discussion with it. I think that's the thing, is that fanfic is limited from being its own work when it's in conversation with the original work and nobody else, and you d and if you don't know the original work, you don't get it. So another example of this is Jane Austen, actually. Northanger Abbey is very specifically a response to a specific book she had read. And so like if you haven't read that book, you don't quite get the story as well.
Yeah.
And I
And
think
if you're
that's the
not
thing.
into a lot of like the gothic novel tropes that like the book she read was playing with, like it is very easy to read Northanger Abbey and go, I don't get it.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that, it's funny. I hadn't quite ever been able to put it into words before, but I think that's what it is. It's interesting how when you discuss something, sometimes you're able to like put into words a thing you felt. I think that's the fundamental difference between fanfic and not fanfic is if it requires the context and is in discussion with the original work.
Work. Yep.
And the original work, a lot of people don't know. Like King Arthur, you could do fanfic of King Arthur all day because everybody kind of knows the tropes. But if it's but something more niche, you wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah. Also, I think in comment to some of the what other people are saying, like Marie mentioned that Wide Sargasso Sea is a retelling of Jane Eyre, but from the Mad Wife's perspective. So a couple of things with that. I think those are so that feels like it is engaging with the original text, but in a new and transformative way,
Yes.
where you are getting the perspective of a character you wouldn't have, and it is, but it also can kind of function as its own thing. Like I imagine you could probably read that and not have read Jane Eyre. And so those I like. So I know there's a Phantom of the Opera retelling, or like some this guy
Axiom's
someone
End.
wrote. No. That my mom read back in the day, and she really, and it just kind of took it to a different, and it is just traditionally published fan fiction, but it was it takes the thing, and I mean also you get the benefit of copyright being nil, and you get to engage with it. But similarly, Angry Otter mentioned the heiress. No, where did it go? The first thing. Dude, read The Heiress by Molly Greeley. It's based on Pride and Prejudice, but it's Anne de Bourgh. And like that kind of thing. Anne's character is like tiny in Pride and Prejudice. And so to get the perspective of another character, I think that works with like being its own traditionally published standalone piece, especially because people who read it have probably read Pride and Prejudice before. So a lot of the problems are people who go to historical fiction for romance probably read Jane Austen. They've probably read Jane Eyre. So it's just part of the cultural milieu of that they're used to versus
Exactly.
if you're really into John Locke or what's the one from the one Star Wars, the latest thing that everybody was super
A Rebel
into,
Moon.
Reylo.
Oh, Rayla.
Reylo fan fiction, that's super specific, and it's not part of a cultural con. Like Jane Austen, Jane Eyre, they've been around long enough that you can kind of engage with, retell and update things, but it is enough of a cultural juggernaut that people can engage with it and they have that context. And so I think it connects directly back to Will's point, where if the fan fiction requires familiarity of the fanfic tropes and the tropes of the original piece and the world of the original piece, and it is not something that people are going to be familiar with outside of it. And also, what he's talking about, when you file this the serial numbers off, you're trying to pretend that it's in a different world versus a retelling of Jane Eyre from the Mad Wife's
That's actually a
perspective.
really good
You're
point.
still engaging with the original context. Same with the heiress that Angry Otter mentioned. I imagine they're still engaging with the original context. It's not pretending it's to be something it isn't. So I think.
And the problem too is that a lot of times you can't do that because of how copyright law works and how Disney has been protecting Mickey Mouse and thus holding back the rest of culture. Like, you can be like, hey, this is my Sherlock and I can name him Sherlock, versus like not being able to do that. And that's why we should all be writing Steamboat Willie Mickey Mouse fanfic at this point. I am waiting for it to come out, the eroticism between him
And
and the
not just
bulldog.
fanfic, you published.
Exactly, with the name in there, but he has to have the steamboat hat. yeah. Yeah,
That's
I think that, I think you're totally right. There are certain tropes too, like alternate world, like AU fanfics that become easier because they don't require the exact world. That's what happened with like the Love Hypothesis or whatever, which is Reylo, but in the STEM real world. And so like
and
that
then
becomes easier.
you also see that with like mythology retellings, like that one author who like review bombed a bunch of her people that were going to be
Oh,
coming out with their
yes.
books at the same time as her, and targeting a lot of
People of color or authors of color.
authors of color. Her book is a space sci-fi retelling of Ariadne
Ariadne.
and Dionysus and
Which sucks because that sounds really interesting, actually.
Except it's bad. I mean, I don't know. I haven't read it, but I've heard it ain't great. And especially it does that thing where you've got a fantastical setting, and they say things
Oh, God, I hate that
like
more than anything in
it
the
has
world.
super
Modern
modern, like it
verbiage.
sounds like it's it like she's a 17-year-old from today, or like, oh no, written with multiple O's, or like fuck me, I guess, like that kind of tone. And I hate that. I hate when I am reading something that is supposed to be fantasy or sci-fi and it just sounds like a they pulled a 22-year-old off the streets of, I don't know, New York, and we're like, here, go do this. It makes me so angry.
I hate it. It is one of my biggest pet, even since I was a child. Okay, so real talk. When I was a child, I really didn't like Aladdin because the genie didn't talk like he was, like he's always breaking the fourth wall and referencing things that aren't. And like as an adult, I find it hilarious, but as a child, I'm like, this is ruining the tone of the work. It's not consistent. 1,000% true. Thousand
And
percent
here's
true.
the thing, though, to be honest, as much as I think Robin Williams' performance in that was great and was a bit like lightning in the bottle, it unfortunately started the very
Oh
bad
God, yes.
downfall of Disney getting comedians to
I'm
be side
losing to a
characters.
bird. If you've watched Lindsay Ellis, you know that.
God, like I the stupid gargoyles or Rosie O'Donnell in Tarzan
Yes.
as that one character. Like there's just so like Disney went down a rabbit hole and it just made for like it didn't like
So many cheap imitators.
and also it didn't benefit the stories at all. At all. Like you got away with it a little bit because the genie was a fantastical magical creature, you know, like a literal magical creature, and so you can be like, okay, I'll allow it. Maybe he's transdimensional. I won't question it. But then like the gargoyles in flipping Hunchback of Notre Dame, one of the when you talk about setting and atmosphere and fear and terror, my Hunchback of Notre Dame was my second favorite Disney movie as a child because of the opening, that dark, shitty opening and like the baby held over the thing and you're like, no, don't kill the baby. And then it's like, it's a monk. Like, it's just the atmosphere is just, I'm not, no. And then you have the stupid gargoyles being fucked. I want you to know, I deluded myself. I erased them from my memory. I remembered that
Really?
movie differently than how it
So
happened
funny.
when I watched the Lindsay Ellis Hunchback of Notre Dame video. I was like, oh my, and I rewatched it and I was like, this is half the movie I remember. But
Yeah.
child me just went, fuck those guys. I hate them.
No, you have a song like Hellfire, which is like, again, the sexiest song Disney has ever done. It is like really quite adult. And then you have I'm Losing to a Bird.
Bird.
Yeah, Aladdin gets
And
away with it
their
again because
entire song.
the Disney the genie is for sure transdimensional. And second of all, he's played by Robin Williams. Like, that's the top of the game. That is the top of someone able to do that you can't get away with the guy from Seinfeld.
He also brought emotionality to it in the
Yes.
moments where he needed to,
Yes,
like
yes.
that moment when he's free or like when he's upset by what Aladdin does. Robin Williams brought emotional stakes to the performance. It was great. And that's just not something you got out of the Gargoyles or the Rosie O'Donnell gorilla. And it just, and there's tonal whiplash. It's just, it's
And the thing
so
is,
good.
Robin Williams could do that. He could make the whiplash work. He could turn on a dime. Like, and that's one of the things that made him like such a great actor. And yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree. Next question. Oh, okay. This one's for you. Somebody said, I didn't read this book, but I'm curious how Maria feels about Gail Carson Levin's storytelling retellings other than the standalone, like El Enchanted. I suppose they're just short fairy tales too, but Gail Carson Levin has always been my queen. So, do you have thoughts on
I
that?
think I read one of her other books. I'm gonna it I it's on my bookshelf, but I don't know where that one is, so I'm just gonna look it up really quick. I think I read the one about the two sisters. I think it was also a Cinderella retelling. Gail Carson Levin. Give me one sec, guys, because I remember enjoying that one. So I
Okay.
read The Two Princes of Bemar, which I enjoyed a lot. Though let me tell you, this cover art, my cover art was way fucking better. Jesus Christ, what is this? I'm just gonna refresh myself for you. That's the one I had. Yeah, so I loved The Two Princesses of Bemar and Ella Enchanted. And I think what she does really well, and please note, it has been years since I've read either of these, is that the stories have lower stakes. A lot of people, when they try redo fairy tales, they give them these really high stakes. I mean, even the Cinder, the Lunar Chronicles books I was talking about, fucking high ass stakes. And at the heart, for most fairy tales, it's very personal stakes. It's not world ending. The best you get is the kingdom's in trouble, you know? And I think Levine really masters quiet stories that are about the characters interacting with the world, given the positions that they're born into. Like the Two Princesses of Bemard, the one is like the outgoing one, and the one's like the quiet one, and them having to deal with the situations they're in. And I just remember it being similar to Ella Enchanted, where it was a story that wouldn't necessarily translate great to film because a lot of it was internal and quiet, and it was a lot of like character growth and that kind of stuff. And I love that. That for me is, and number one, I also just like a quiet story. I don't always need world-ending stakes. I don't need somebody's like head gonna be chopped off at the end for me to get invested in a book. Young Maria and older Maria share this, because again, I read Ella Enchanted and that book when I was in like elementary school, and I reread them in middle school and in high school. But that's what I remember her really capturing and giving you a window into, because one of the things fairy tales themselves, while they often aren't super high stakes, is they're very emotionally distanced from their characters. Your characters are not experienced, like you're not in their head experiencing their growth, their emotional reactions. And she did an excellent job of dealing with that. Like the Ella Enchanted climax in the book is happening entirely in Ella's head as she's like potentially gonna kill, like, and when she snaps out of it, like, if you were watching it visibly, it would just be somebody like this for a minute having a whole thing, but you are in her head and you're like, come on, girl, you got this, like, I'm there with you, like, and you're just so invested in that moment, but it's a quiet moment. And it's her, it's actually her, the guy she wants to, she's in love with, Prince Charming, wants to marry her, and she can't say yes. She can't say yes, because if she says yes, she will be a security risk to him for the rest of their lives together. Anyone could tell her, when you are in that bed with him, stab him through the heart, and she'd do it. Like, that's just her. So
Oh yeah, I forgot. I did know that about that.
The whole conceit of the book is that she has to do what she's told. She was cursed by a fairy with obedience, and she. He's sitting there like, just say yes, I love you, like, and she loves him and she wants him, and the romance was so cute and quiet and just like two awkward teenagers, like, in a struggling with their shit, and it was just so fucking cute. And so her sitting there going, I can't marry him, I can't marry him, and just like having this moment while he's on his knees like, marry me, marry me, and then she's like, no, and you're like, holy shit, she said no. Oh, and it's like, and he's upset because he's like, you just said no, and then she's like, actually, never mind, I said no, my answer's yes, and it's just such a weird moment that you can't have on screen because it's not going to play. So of course they had to have Anne Hathaway holding a knife as if she was gonna kill him, and it just, it's so good. And so that I would say is what she does really well, is she knows how to embrace the quiet, character-driven moments that fairy tales themselves are actually missing.
That's very cool. That's very makes me want to read it, though I probably wouldn't like it because it's YA of some type. But like, yeah, quiet, things only matter as much as your character want as your as the character cares about them. And that's just something that's missing so often. And then that's also just an interesting discussion about the strengths of prose versus filmic language, and that the two just sometimes some books make really good advantage of it, and sometimes other books don't. That's something me and Katie talk about in the critique streams sometimes. Which, guys, we have a Patreon. Join to support independent journalism. You get access to the Discord, which I've been comparing it to a few other BookTuber Discords, and ours is much more active and lively, and not to mention smart. Me and Katie do critique streams. That's another a different tier where we talk about prose. And then there's the mid-tier, which is the book club stream, where you guys get to pick one fourth of the books we read. And then you also get another live stream that's just like one I get to pick per month. So that's two live streams per month. Okay. Oh, hi, Firelight. The other one. Okay, so okay, this one is from the Discord. For Will specifically, since Will doesn't like most male characters, what are the traits you like in a male character? And I thought it would be funnier to have Maria try to answer this one before I do.
Oh, absolutely. A perfect example of the kind of male character that Will likes is the male character from Scorpio Races, where they're competent, they're practical, they're not witty, and not that they aren't smart or can't do a good turn of phrase, but they're not sassy. He doesn't like broody. So if something has happened to you and it affects, like, it affects the character sometimes, he that's okay with. He's not anti hashtag trauma, but they can't be like dark and brooding about it, because he just like, and also you can't see the author's hand too much. Like, if the author's like, look how hot this guy is, he's oh, don't you want to fix him, like, if that happens, Will is out. He's just fucking gone. So and we talked about this a little bit with Kaz in Six of Crows, the book, versus Kaz in the show, where Kaz in the show is kind of quiet,
Sullen.
practical, sullen, and not like, he's not super like quippy, and like, he's not in your face. He's not also not like, I'm good at everything, and just I'm the like, and nobody's like, wow, Kaz is the coolest badass we've ever seen, badass, and that kind of thing. And so that kind of character where they're like competent, and he also likes dumb brute that is smarter than you think he is.
That's a good trope too.
He likes that. He also likes coming from a lower class but seeking better things for himself and to
That's a
better
good trope.
himself, especially if he has if he's in love with a higher class lady and he has to prove himself despite his lower standings. That he likes. But again, the author's can't hand has to be hidden. The author can't be like, look how cool he is, or oh man. And I also the character has to fit the world. Will is not very forgiving to male characters that feel like they came from our world. Similar to like how I don't like it when I'm like, that is just a modern, that is a 2023 mouthpiece in a book set in fantasy Middle Ages.
Maria knows me very well. That is all extremely accurate. And this is mostly for either male viewpoint characters, main characters, or love interest. There's like secondary male characters that I quite like easily. Tamsin Muir has a bunch. The thing about it is that it's all of those things. And so like some examples, for example, I liked Matthias in Six of Crows a lot more than I thought I would. I didn't like him in the show, and then I liked him there. Whereas again, Kaz, I fucking hated in that book. Whereas in the show, I found him pretty okay. Jocelyn, I kind of liked. He was pretty good, though. The author goes on about how pretty he is a lot. Let's see. I also
Competent
like Kit.
and sullen.
Exactly. And not funny. Not very good at being funny.
No,
Sean
he's
Kendrick
not.
is also a great character. One of the things that can really endear me to a male character is he's very devoted to his lady.
Or an animal.
Or an animal, yes. Vampires of El Norte almost had that, but then it got really annoying. But that was one of the things I sort of liked about Hector, I think it was originally. And then one of the other ones we read recently, I was just looking at it. I can't remember, but yeah, those kinds of characters that like I appreciate more. The problem is that I really can't stand sassy male characters. Partly just because I don't like sassy characters in general, but it's especially bad when it's men. And this kind of presents a problem because again, we read a lot of girl books for girls, and female authors absolutely love their sassy, high-strung male bitchy characters, and I don't
With
like
a
them at
dark
all.
past, but actually, they've been a golden boy the whole time. All of the things they did that looked bad were actually for really heckin' good reasons, and you just didn't understand at the time.
There's a very specific kind of like, because I see this a lot in the alpha male dark romances. It's this kind of like the male character will kind of be like, oh, superior to the woman, and she like she blushes because he's kind of like almost manipulative of her, and he's always in control, and I fucking despise that. It's and also the way female writers write men's libido is just super fucking weird. Anyway, I'm not going to get on to too long of a rant about that. But yeah, no. So that's the kind of thing. And again, we just don't read a lot of those kinds of books. But there are it also is
It's
just like a
funny.
skill. Go ahead.
People are mentioning Mackie's stepdaughter, all because we read Raven Boys. We liked the boys in Raven Boys. You know?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Yeah, I did. I thought I didn't love all of them, but none of them actively annoyed me, and I thought they were all well-sketched characters. Yeah, part of it is a
Jonathan
skill thing.
Stroud and the Bartimaeus trilogy.
I don't remember if I liked him or not. I think I might have not.
I liked it. Nathaniel was annoying, but he was a well-sketched character. Like he was supposed to be annoying so he could have character
Yes.
growth. Like
Yes, that's the thing about sassy characters is that like I can like them if they're supposed to be kind
me
of
and Phaedra in book one. I hate first half of Phaedra, and she just but then she grows to be one of my favorite female characters. So like, but she was supposed to be annoying, and you wanted to punch her in her smug little face.
Chantel says, Will, you seem to be more forgiving towards male characters when they're monster boyfriends. Is the reason for that? Yes, monster boyfriends are not sassy, and they're also there's like an inherent non-hotness to them, and that kind of makes them interesting to me as well. And often they're kind of very like there's a it kind of falls into like the big and tough but gentle trope or whatever that is, the gentle giant trope or whatever that I quite like. Yeah, mainly it's that the author doesn't insist that they're sexy and they don't try to be sassy most of the time. But to be fair, I don't think we've actually read any good monster boyfriend
Except for
once.
Axiom's End. And, you know, One thing I'll give Alice is she never tried to make Ampersand be a sassy hot guy.
Temeraire
Like
comes
that's
close to Monster Boyfriend, and I quite liked that. That's Monster Bro-friend.
it is Monster Bro-friend. That is a romance, but a platonic one. And that one's great. But yeah, I think there's
And like, to be fair, I also want to be clear. Some of this, I'm sure, is subjective and not objective. Some of this is just you like the things you like, and that's not necessarily the most enlightened thing. And it's not like, especially when it comes to like gender roles, like one thing may not be better than one thing that you like may be a personal thing. It's not necessarily the most like woke or equal thing, but like those are just my tendencies as a reader. Okay,
I
let's
hope you all
see.
feel like you know Will better now.
Or at least can engage with my criticisms more often.
Handbook as a whole, I'm ready. Okay, go, Will. Sorry.
let's see. Yeah, so the other question somebody had is origin of Will's love for hot bitchy women and Katie's love of monster boyfriend. Katie's not here, and I also think they meant to put Maria. So we'll discuss that. Why don't you start with your discussion of monster boyfriend origins?
Beauty and the Beast was my favorite movie as a 4-year-old. I watched it every day. My parents hated it. They would I would finish it and then they'd put it back on, and I liked it because it was a bit scary, and like the opening overture of that like dark like music, and the like you see the stained glass and like the spooky castle and the beast. Like a young Maria liked to be a little like, and it's funny because I'm like easily scared. I can't watch horror movies, but I liked a little edge to think. Again, I loved Hunchback of Notre Dame, partly because it fucking scared me and it was really intense, but it was also like just good. And so it was, so I think it just starts there. And so that, like, so my love of that trope started very young. But then in middle school and high school, for a lot of my, and so I am Greek, surprise. And there was a period of my life where I was very pale and pasty, and I was the my body hair was much darker than it is now. So I was like oddly shaped. I was pasty skinned. I had a unibrow. My mustache was growing in despite waxing regularly. And I was just awkward, like to the point where I remember one day in middle school, you know, like in middle school, and you don't know this well, this isn't for you. Will was homeschooled. The older boys would like go up to like the 6th grade girls and like just grab your arm and be like, "I love you, go out with me." To like fuck with you. And one day one of them came and did that to me, and he was holding my arm, and he looked at it and he went, "Oh God, she's so hairy," and just let my arm go. And I was like, "I'm a monster." So there was a stage of my life where I was the nerdy girl who read that felt isolated from the people around her, but I also felt like the beast. And so watching Beauty and the Beast and the Beauty and the Beast fairy tale as a whole felt like I was everyone. I was the beast. I was Belle. I was misunderstood. And I remembered thinking maybe someday someone will be able to look at me and see past the way I look and realize that I'm actually kind of cool. And then, you know, you also have the stage as a girl where you're like, I can change him, which I, let me tell you, 30s are good for getting you out of that mindset. And so it like that for me is a huge like all, so there's like a lot of like that stuff wrapped into it, but also just 4-year-old Maria just was really into like the beast roaring at Belle, and you know, I don't know, guys. There you go. That's my answer.
I think the way it's matured too is that you, like I, are very interested in like different cultures and different modes of thinking. And when you're dealing with a real beast, like that's so interesting. That's all Axiom's End is like really dealing
Yes.
with the mind.
Oh.
And so like that's really fascinating.
And
Yeah,
that's why
I
I wish that one, the For the Crown, that the one with the wolf guy,
for the wolf.
I wish he'd been either an actual giant wolf or a forest monster.
I
You
like
know,
the
do you know how
ant
cool it
tree
would have been
guy.
if he had just been
Yeah.
a giant tree guy?
He was a little sassy, which I did not like. Not that the question asked it, but I also am somewhat invested in Monster Boyfriend. Yeah, for me, it's like it's a lot of I have a lot of body dysmorphia, and it was worse when I was younger. And so for me, like, yeah, I think there's also some of that, like, being the beast. And like, yeah, I think so as well. I actually think also, funnily, it plays into my love of Downtown Boy, Uptown Girl, where it's like, but like in terms of not classes, but like in terms of like, she's the lady and he's the monster, and I really like that kind of thing. My love of bitchy girls, I don't know where that comes from necessarily. Partly it's I'm Hispanic and my family is very like I have four aunts and my mom, and they're all extremely high strung and combative, and like just there's a lot of there's a lot of energy running around there. And so I think there's just an extent to which like that's what I grew up in, and so that's kind of what I'm a little bit familiar with. I also just like high strung girls in general because my energy tends to be kind of lower, so like I've always kind of been drawn to like, oh, she knows what she wants, that's cool, that's fun. I don't necessarily there's something about me that I like being the quiet one next to the loud one. Like, I'm not that tall. I'm like 5'8", which is not short, but it's like it's not that tall. And like the few times I've been around a girl who was taller than me that I've been into, I actually really liked it because it kind of forced me to stand up straight and be like, no, I have to have a quiet energy to possess myself to offset her being taller than me. And that made me feel kind of cool and like a rock. And so like I think there's a certain amount of which I like that in characters. I like when there's a bitchy hot girl and the male character is still like solid around it. And I think also it's like there's a certain amount of like the not the Schadenfreude when the hot bitchy girl gets dethroned, but like other I think there's a little bit of that. I like that trope of, shut up. You don't know what yeah, shut up. Shut up. We're not gonna talk about this. My mom will eventually watch this. I kind of like she's not even muted, by the way. I kind of like that, which is maybe like, I don't know, gender problematic or whatever, but it's a trope I like and it's one I enjoy. And like in general, I kind of like, and also the thing about it is that I love the whole like trauma thing. And so bitchy hot girls who are doing that to be, to keep their vulnerabilities at bay, I think it's just, I just really like that trope as well. Yeah, I mean, this started really young. I remember there's one Arthurian tale that I remember reading where like, the guy is pursuing this lady and she's like really shitty to him all the time and like has him captured a couple of times, and then at the end they get together anyway. And I always remember being like,
Yeah.
cool.
So, moral of the
Cool.
story, it starts young.
It is actually funny how young certain things that will bloom into more interest as you get older start very, very young. Sewell just likes the he asked for no pickles girl.
Pickles girls? Yeah. Except it would be he asked for no tomatoes.
To paraphrase a post I saw, why do you quiet calm guys go with high strung and fiery women? Because someone needs to tell the waiter I ordered mashed potatoes and it ain't gonna be me. There actually is a little bit of that, I think, too, in that like you very rarely see two quiet people paired together because one of the people has to be the one to talk. And so like that's kind of
My
fun.
boyfriend says that to me all the
Really?
time. I remember at one point I was like, I'm sorry I talk so much. He was like, we wouldn't be here if you didn't. He was like, we would have if he's like, I can't. He's like, I've been on dates with other quiet people, and we just sit there looking at each other and like, he was like, yeah, you like this is the only dynamic that works.
This is one of the things I appreciate about both Berea and Katie is that they talk a lot, and so it kind of takes the stress off of me to try to drive conversations. There was one girl in school I really liked, like not like romantically or whatever, but just as friends, but like she wasn't good at talking, and so like it was always a lot of stress on me, and eventually our friendship faded because it was just too much work to keep up. And I've been like that. By the way, all the things I mentioned, not good for actual real life relationships. I've been drawn to those kinds of girls in real life, and it is always a bad idea because in fiction, the traumatically over like all that stuff can be overcome with the power of love or the people growing. And in real life, it's more of a sign of instability and emotional illiteracy.
Similarly, the I can fix him is also something that
Yeah.
you gotta grow out of at some point, you know? Or I can fix her. Just don't worry. You want someone who's fixing themselves or who has or in the process. Like we love a in progress king or queen. But yeah. We love
Yeah,
the
so no, I think
tropes.
that's but yeah, and the thing is, there is something sort of exciting too, about that energy of like bickering kind of energy a little bit. That's fun, but in fiction and in real life, but in real life it's deleterious over time. Okay, so anything from the comments you want to mention? I don't think so, right? I can fix him, okay, but what if I can make him worse? That's very funny.
Yeah, that's terrible. Valerie just had a. I just want to highlight this. I obsess. So Valerie says I obsessively watch Robin Hood because I was trying to figure out why what the fox was doing was different than socialism, which my mom vocally dubbed as a great evil. To which Angry Otter replied, "But mother, the fox is telling me to redistribute the wealth."
That's so funny. Yeah, no, that's the thing with Robin Hood. It's like it's just like, and he got, you know, throughout history, great robbers have been tarnished by the bourgeoisie who want to keep their wealth. And theirs is unspoken violence versus the spoken violence of the outlaw. Just because I think this will be a fast one. This was on our Warhammer video. If you tried to put everything that Warhammer 40K is into a book, you wouldn't have a novel. You'd have an omnibus that would put, I'm sorry guys, it's a little far away, that put a generalized history of Europe to shame. That's like textbook levels of dense, dry reading. At that point, you might as well say no well-written novel could ever be an introduction to Warhammer 40K. The point of an intro book isn't to tell you everything about a world or setting, is to provide an entry point that's easy to digest and allows one to expand on the setting from there. Okay, so this kind of, I think, goes back a little bit to our discussion of fan fiction from a minute ago about a fan work is when it requires under it's in conversation and kind of requires a familiarity with the original work. And so what this guy is essentially arguing, though I don't he doesn't obviously think about it that way, is that you can it's unfair to expect an author to be able to write a good book in the Warhammer universe without
As a
knowing.
starter novel.
Yeah, and I just fundamentally don't agree with that.
Yeah. I also don't agree. And I have no idea how deep the wells of Warhammer 40K goes. I've had a glimpse. I've peeked under the cover. And so I don't know. But I think one of the things that if you are writing a book, is whatever you are engaging in within your book. 'Cause like you can have a book that doesn't engage with everything that Warhammer has to offer, but the parts of it you are engaging with need to be presented in a way that somebody, if you're publishing it as if it's a book somebody can just pick up off the streets, can read, can engage with. I think it is very, because any book that has, so we can use Lord of the Rings as a great example. He did not
Tomes
put,
and tomes of
yes,
world building and
yes.
linguistics.
Homes, he did not include most of that. Like, he literally wrote an entire flippant language, and there's a couple lines that get put in the, you know? And so, just because there is this massive external, like, lore to it, that doesn't mean that the book itself should not function of its own. I mean, you can read Lord of the Rings and engage with it happily, and you don't need to have read or be familiar with the Silmarillion. Like, and so I don't think it's unfair to ask. And because I do agree with the person where I think if they were to write the lore, you would have textbooks.
And
It
I'm
would
familiar with all
function.
of it. Go ahead.
And it would function like a textbook. But when I read a novel, that's not what I'm looking for. It's like, All Quiet on the Western Front is about World War I from a German soldier's perspective. It is not telling you everything about World War I. It is not a textbook. It is not engaging with every single detail. And you can also be not that familiar with World War I, but still feel and hit the because it's a human story about the people on the ground having effects. The book itself is not trying to give you all of that context that goes into it, and there is a lot of political context that most of us don't actually know unless you've studied it heavily that went into what and where those characters were doing. Like, and so I don't think you necessarily need all the context. I think you should, if you're engaging with certain things, you should give some context to those specific things.
Yeah, no, I 1000%. There's no reason you need to know the Necron lore or the Orc lore if you're not actually engaging with characters from that society even. You just need to know of them as basic things. Another example of this is the Dunkin' Egg novellas from George R. R. Martin. Song of Ice and Fire, massive tomes of books, even more backstory, but you can just repick those up, read them, and then not have read the actual series. I haven't read them or all of them, but that's what from what I understand. And the thing is, the things we were complaining about in that book were things like, they didn't explain what Chaos Space Marines were. So Maria
Yeah.
was just like, I just thought that was their own thing. And like, there was a lot of things in that. And then we had another comment talking about how that book was actually a little bit, the first Eisenhorn book is actually a little bit weird because it was supposed to be an introduction that could be used for like, role playing as well. And so some of the stuff, it isn't really trying to explain or resolve everything. It's like kind of not necessarily functioning as a novel. And so like, yeah, sometimes there were just like basic things the book would not explain to you, or like servitors, it just would not explain what they were. And
It did
like,
not. I had to ask William.
yeah,
He
they're
had to, before I
lobotomized
started the
people.
book, he gave me like a 20-minute, here's the world here, because it's not going to explain any of it to you. And it didn't. And then like there was one comment where somebody was like, oh, she couldn't even tell that there this guy was actually a this person. And I was like, in what world was I supposed to know? I know nothing. I am but a babe. What do you want from me? How am I supposed to know that the giant hulky guy is a specific thing, but they don't tell you it's a specific thing? I'm sorry.
To be funny, the funny thing is, I didn't even realize he was a space marine until about halfway through because the book actually doesn't tell you it specifically. The thing is, books often, even for topics you're very well aware of, can be kind of hard to visualize and think about. So you kind of have to catch readers up. There are other ways in which I kind of do understand a little bit more. So, like, one of the things is we read the Sophias Cain, the first of the Sophias Cain, which is pronounced Cephas, but I pronounce it Sophias because that's when I originally read it 10 years ago. Books, and like that one, like that book is not super interesting to me in a lot of ways. Or like, there's an underground force coming to power, and I was like, it's going to be one of these three tabletop armies. Those are the only options, and so that's something where like the book actually would be more effective if you didn't know the Warhammer universe. Or like, that book was weird for Maria because they never really talk about how like openly fascist the Empire, the Imperium is, and I'm like, yeah, you're not gonna. That's not a discussion that's gonna happen. That's something where, like, yeah, you do need to know the larger work. But at the same time, you could have a book that criticizes that fascism within the novel itself. And so, like, there's no reason that you can't limit the scope to a more human story and just tell the parts of it you need to.
There was a character at the end of Eisenhorn who was like, but what about a world that looked like this? And I was kind of like, I'm kind of with that guy. Like, I don't like how he what he was trying to do, and I don't like his methods, but like
Okay, here's the problem, and I've said this before. We're far enough in the video that it's okay. Warhammer is a system that validates fascism, and those are the mechanics of the universe itself, and that's kind of a problem. And I understand why the universe got there without anyone actually being like at fault per se in the writer's room. But like, yeah, so there's parts where like, okay, why is cohabitating with the aliens a bad thing? And it's like, well, you have to read a ton of the lore and stuff. But even then, it's like, yeah, you kind of should be on that guy's side a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, why? This.
It's that villain trope of villain makes a good point, but then murders people. And it's like, okay, well, that's cheap. Like, you can't just have th that should not be the way that you signal evilness in your characters. It's
And
a very
also
imperialist view.
that shouldn't be like the fact that the people on the good side are not engaging with the good thing that the like you don't get to justify the bad stuff that is happening on your thing just because this guy killed people, even though his ideas like were, like it was a lot. Warhammer, it was not terrible. I didn't like hate it, but it was rough as a new reader who was unfamiliar with it. And the Cephas Cain books were like funny and actively engaging with one of my favorite British. Is it a sitcom? I don't know what you would call it.
Cultural products.
Yeah, Blackadder. And even though their guy was way more confident than Blackadder ever was, but it's fine.
I may go through at some point on my own Fear the Alien, or there's one called something Victory, because there are actually a couple stories in there. It's a omnibus of short stories that engage with the Warhammer universe in a really interesting way. So one of them is from the view of a servitor who are lobotomized robots people essentially, and usually just like nobody even cares about them, but it's from the viewpoint of him and how he views his faith, and that was really interesting. There's one from the viewpoint of a gene stealer, again really interesting, and actually kind of engages with the fascism of the Imperium. I don't think I would necessarily make Maria and Katie read them because there's no ebook versions, but I might do that at some point. But I think that's one of the more interesting ways to engage with the Warhammer universe is in a critical sense, and even sometimes in a fan work way, because some of those stories I'm thinking of might not work as standalones. I don't know. We'll see more if I ever get around to doing it. Yeah. Villain makes a point, then murders. Ah, poor Magneto.
Poor
So this is
Magneto.
something that actually came up. I have 2 video essays about Black Panther that I really want to make at some point, and one of them I'm never going to because it would be titled "Why Do Black Panther's Characters Think They're Black?" And that's just not a great title to clickbait the.
No, 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 no.
It makes sense in context.
Yes.
And the other one is that the narrative of Black Panther is a very imperialist narrative, because it's the we are part of a group that does a flawed thing. Somebody from outside the group comes in to point out that this is a bad thing, but then also murders a bunch of people. People in the group defeat the bad guy and are like, okay, we'll reform the system a little bit. And like that's an inherently from the viewpoint of the colonizer and not the colonized, or of the in-group and not the out-group. And I don't think it changes just because the characters are all black. Like I don't think that, I think it's still inherently a somewhat imperialist viewpoint. But I just thought that's something I might, back when I thought I would do video essays, that's something I thought I would talk about. My husband introduced me to Warhammer Fantasy before 40K, and I'm more confused than I was when I started learning. Well, lucky for you, there's now Warhammer Age of Sigmar, so there's now 3 very
Oh,
distinct
no.
settings that are somewhat interconnected.
When the Warhammer show comes out,
Yeah, it's.
would you consider doing a comparison to the books if it happens to be based on one specifically? Sure.
I would.
I don't have the context to answer that question, but sure.
We would consider it. No, Henry Cavill is going to be in it if it ever
Of
gets made.
course
So
he is. Of course he
he
is.
has a custodes army. He's a huge Warhammer
I
nerd.
know he is. Listen, I have watched him talk about Warhammer in multiple. That guy is like the biggest sleeper nerd
Yeah, he
on the
really
planet.
is.
Jesus Christ. I've watched him talk about his Warhammer stuff. Like it that completely checks out.
Okay, let's see. Let's go with okay. We did this one. Let's see what time are we at 122. Okay, we're doing good. Okay, so this is a bit of a challenging one, but I just wanted to kind of think of my thoughts through of it. And we get this a lot on the Savior's Champion videos. Hearing about how simplistic this is about the Savior Sister. Hearing about how simplistic, I didn't realize this was going to be so tall. Okay. Hearing about how simplistic and shallow the worldview portrayed in Mind, the author, this feels really like a dip into a narcissist's point of view. You look at the symptoms of narcissistic personality disorder and the main character's perception of the world and attitude, it becomes a checklist real quick. So, I used to watch, sorry guys, I'm replugging in. Okay. I used to watch a channel called Psychology in Seattle. Which was about a couples counselor, but he would like review like 40, 90 Day Fiance and like some other reality TV shows. And he would talk about it. And I found it fascinating because he really knew a lot about the topic. There was a huge amount of compassion in the way he talked about it. And so one of the things he would talk about narcissistic personality disorder. And what he would say is that usually what happens is that as a young, very young, like under one, you are mistreated by the world. Like your parent does not, it's he referred to them as intimacy traumas, I think, or something like that, where like you are mistreated by your parent or the world. And the thing is, you are a baby, you do not have the tools to unpack that. So you go in one of 2 ways. Either you become a depressed person and you get the worldview that I am always wrong and the world is always right. Or you become narcissistic and you internalize it as, I am always right, the world is always wrong. Because again, you're a baby. You cannot really figure this stuff out on your own. And so they're really two sides of the same coin. Guess which one I got? It's not the narcissism one. But the thing is that that's how he explained it, is that narcissism is they are basically running on fumes all the time. There is a veneer of I am great all the time, and that's how they think. But under that is this vast emotional emotion of just despair and self-disgust and like all that stuff. And so if you puncture that upper layer, that's what they have underneath it. And that's why they so desperately keep that layer above. And so, like, I'm not sure that that's completely, that's how he explained it as a therapist. And so, like, I'm not a licensed therapist. Don't take my word on it. But from that viewpoint, looking at the savior sister, that's not the case, because we actually have access to her thoughts, and she doesn't have that deep well of worthlessness under it. She just is a terrible, she just like does terrible things. She only ever thinks about herself. And what I came to was that, like, it's interesting because we don't really have words for describing people who are normal but terrible. We always have to pathologize it to some extent. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, there's not a strong way of saying she was a terrible person, but also not because of a mental disorder, just because she was a terrible person.
So one thing I will say that does kind of fit the narcissist, I watched a video recently, a reel about this woman who has narcissistic personality disorder and how she got a wake-up call with her therapist, where she's been telling her therapist some things, and she specified that, and I can't, like, I watched the video and then just kept scrolling, so I don't remember who it was. If anyone has happened to see this video, please, like, comment it and I'll put it up on the screen, she only goes to therapy after something traumatic has happened, like, she doesn't, like, and to deal with that specific thing, not necessarily to end, because, like, her therapist is often like, do you want to deal with everything else, and she's like, no, and she'd been having issues with her partner, and then her partner came into therapy, and afterwards her therapist was like, everything he just said and described and how you were with him is exactly the opposite from what you've been telling me this whole time, like, you have grossly and she said, the therapist said this in a very, like, kind and constructive way, but was very real that, like, you have been manipulating how you have been telling these things to me, and that is something that shows up in the savior's sister, because, like, you as the reader are like, really, that's the action we're choosing to take
here? Yeah, but that's true, herself, actually
feels so righteous in what she's doing, and is so the thing is, I don't think it's intentional, because I think Maressi is on her side, and I think she thinks that, like, what the character doing is right, and I think this is a problem of having an idea for a character, and despite the fact that you've made a morally gray and complex character, wanting them to be good and just failing to, and so I think that's why it comes across as a narcissist, because you as the author are kind of gaslighting the reader into, and so it feels like narcissism. It feels like narcissism.
And the thing is that, like, again, I think it's interesting, and this is not groundbreaking, but I just think it's interesting we don't have words to describe really terrible people that don't fall back on psychology. And I'm not one of those people who's like, I don't police clinical terms used in a non-clinical sense a lot. Like, I just don't think, like, language works like that. I don't really think it's worth many times trying to tamp down on, like, oh, they said that they're schizophrenic, but they're not actually schizophrenic. They're just referring to being, or bipolar is one that gets used a lot in vernacular, but is not a, and I understand, sorry guys, I'm saying like three sentence fragments. I understand that the damage that, that using clinical words for mental illness in regular vernacular can have, and sort of genericizing them. I do understand that. But I also think that this is just a natural outgrowth of how language works, in the same way that decimate, which is 1 in 10 casualties, is not a lot of casualties, now means a lot of casualties, or the way that literally now means figuratively. Language evolves in ways that aren't always like the best. But I do think it's interesting that we just don't have a way of saying this person was a very bad person without medicalizing it. And at the same time, I'm going to say something. Okay, so here's the thing. I really don't like talking about authors' personal lives. I really don't. I watched a YouTuber, a booktuber that our Discord really likes, and she talked about this person's work, an author's work, and made inferences and judgments about his personal life from it. And I really did not like that. And it's something that I have always been very careful not to do. So, like Madeline Miller, who wrote my arch nemesis, Achilles, or not Achilles, Song of
Song
Achilles.
of Achilles.
I will say all day that I think she is overly enamored of gay soft boys in her work, but I would never say that, oh, I think she treats gay people in real life badly because of how her work plays out. I just don't think that's A, productive, or B, you can really know anyone that way. But because of some other stuff I've learned about Morrissey since starting the channel, I do think that the way Layla acts is kind of a reflection of how Moressi sees the world. And I think that goes a little bit to what Maria was talking about, in that the character is not narcissistic. It's that the writer writing them, they're kind of not narcissism, but kind of narcissism creates a world
Authorly
where,
narcissism.
yeah, the authorly narcissism creates a character who's just fundamentally at odds with the facts of her world and acts like a narcissist.
I agree. I agree.
I'm just looking through the comments. Sorry.
Yeah, me too. Ooh. Chantal has a
Yeah.
good one.
No,
I
it's
feel like
exactly this.
Yeah, I feel like this happens a lot in fiction where the author likes a character too much. The author will often manipulate every aspect of the story just to keep the character in the spotlight, even if it kills the integrity of the story. And I think that is a huge issue in like The Savior's Sister, where obviously Morrissey really likes Layla, but and so the fact that Layla is doing terrible things is she tries so hard to make it be for good reasons, and you as the reader are just a little skeptic. And listen, I know some people read that book and had zero skepticism. They were just like, vibes all day, you know, whatever the case is, and that's fine. Some people can go in and read it that way. But for me, it was just like glaring, like, you're the good guy?
Well,
I'm
I do think it also comes down a little bit to blind spots in people's morality, in that one of the things that I've become very disillusioned with as I've grown older is the immorality of people. And like not even necessarily in a depressing way, but like, so for example, I'm a very strong leftist, and I have been since I was really young. And seeing leftism on the internet has made me realize that you can have all of the right political opinions, but for all of the wrong reasons, and still be extremely susceptible to basic like tribism or logical fallacies. And so I think that often, how does this connect back to what I was talking about? Sorry guys, I just
I
went
don't
off
know.
topic a little bit.
You
Oh,
figure that out.
a lot of people don't realize, for example, that like the torture trope is a problem. Like a lot of people just do not seem to realize that that was a thing, and so it goes by them. And so
And
that's a
it comes
case.
up everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And people are like, well, yeah, but nobody's gonna expect it. Like, no, unfortunately, that if you show torture working, I'm gonna get on a soapbox really quick. I'm so
Hit
sorry,
me with
guys.
it.
We've done this. If you show torture working in fiction regularly, right? And that it is an effective tool to get information out, and especially for characters that you are really rooting for, and you're rooting for their story and their success in this information, and you're like, yeah. Then when you hear that potential terrorists or criminals are being tortured for information, you could have the wrong response in that moment because you have been shown this
Yes.
so many times as a tool of good, as a tool of good. This is a tool of good. It gets the information where, in fact, it often does not get correct information. A much better form of information gathering is espionage and deal making. That's how that people get actual good information, is they cut deals, and they or through espionage. It is not through torture. People will say anything. It's why a lot of sometimes police
Yes, false confessions. My sister
false
studied those.
confessions.
That's
Yeah.
a rampant problem.
And it's a huge problem. Like, if you don't let someone drink or eat food for 8 hours while you've been
Berating them.
berating them and interrogating them, at a certain point, they're going to say anything just so they can go to the bathroom in peace or eat something or drink something. And they're tired and they're exhausted and their brain has turned off, and they will say anything. And so it's just one of those things where, like, every time we bring it up, people are like, yeah, but that was a bad character. But like, that's entirely the process, the problem. If we, like, you don't know when actual people are being tortured in that moment, like, if your government tells you that was a bad person, or the police tells you if that's a bad person, I feel like we are savvy enough humans to look at that and go, maybe not. And just to understand that torture is never a solid information gathering tool. It just isn't. That helps society as a whole become better. So I think authors continuing to perpetuate it in their novels is problematic, and I wish more people jumped on that bandwagon.
And
Let's
that's one of
go.
the examples of Maressi not really understanding. Like, she writes a thing because she thinks it's correct, but she doesn't understand that in world, why does this torture work where she's cutting off her substitute mother's toes? Okay. Let's see. Popular. Okay, narcissism. All right, we have time for a few more, right?
I think so.
Okay, we have do you want to do why books are popular but not good, atmospheric writing, the revenge in Ninth House, or yeah, do you want to do one of those three?
Either any of those sound good at this point.
Okay.
All
Okay,
sounds
so
good.
this is a more Chantel had asked, in your opinion, what are the core elements of great atmospheric writing? Any S-tier atmospheric author recs? And I think there's a few things that go into atmospheric writing that are kind of obvious in terms of like bring in all the senses, have metaphors that connect correctly with the connotations. One of the examples is in The Cyborg Tinkerer, the sex scene. She uses a lot of words that are just kind of have weird connotations, like meat or flesh at certain
Or
points, and you're
nut
like,
butter in a sexy scene.
yeah.
Nut
Yeah,
butter.
exactly. You want your descriptions to have the connotations that match the world. Something I've also noticed recently, I think, is that there is a certain the inherent facts of the world will always kind of bubble to the reality of how the character or of how the reader is reading the world if they're pervasive enough. So, this is why often like comedy can make a dark world seem okay, but at a certain point, if the world continues to be dark, that comedy element just becomes more of a gallows humor. Like that, the inherent feelings of the actions underneath will just creep up. And so, like, I think that sometimes that's one good way of creating atmosphere is just like have the world be flatly what it is and continue like build the artifice of it and then just continue. Sorry, I'm beginning to lose my brain a little bit. Build the realities of the world, and eventually the readers will pick up on that. So, for example, in World War I, there was this thing where when they were going over mud flats, and this would happen a lot in trenches or whatever, they would be going over these boards, and sometimes the boards would sink, and so the people would be trapped in the sucking mud, and they would be screaming for people to help them, and nobody could, and they would just slowly be stuck, like, suffocated. And you would have to just deal with that. And like that's a thing where like you could describe that very flatly without any use of language or metaphors, and like it gives you a feeling. Like that is a thing that creates an atmosphere regardless of how you describe it. And so I think those are kind of like the two things that really create a strong atmosphere. Also, sorry. Viewpoint, how the character is thinking, because that is the other big thing, is that you are in a character's head. That is the strength of writing over a visual medium. How the character thinks about things will affect how the reader feels.
So I think a really good example of this, as far as the point of view and the character, and I'm going to use T. Kingfisher because we read one of her books that had a really good atmosphere. And like some great stuff, and that was Nettle and Bone. And I finished What Moves the Dead, and I'm on What Feasts the Dead
At night.
at Night, or whatever the second
What
one
feasts
is.
at night?
And the problem with that is that the point of view character is so in Nettle and Bone, the point of view character was very practical and a bit melancholic naturally,
Yes.
and had like some I don't want to say self-confidence issues, but it was a bit anxious. And so that character's interaction with some of the darker things helped build the atmosphere, the character's reaction. And so one of the things I will give Kingfisher is her point of view character is going to affect, like, she commits hard to whatever personality she's given her character. It's similar in
Sword Heart.
Sword Heart, where the vibe is just completely different. And I a little bit to its detriment, we haven't done the video for What Moves the Dead, but a little bit to the detriment of this book, because I was expecting, looking at the cover and having read Nettle and Bone, I was expecting atmosphere. I was expecting the creepy creeps, you know, the whole nine yards. And I
Is it
didn't get
not
it.
like that?
It's not. It's not. It's not.
That's it,
There
T.
are
Kingfisher. No more chances. This was your third chance.
eventually some stuff that's happening is so that you get it, but the buildup to it was not where it should be. And it has entirely to do with what you were talking about, where, you know, some things are like men slowly screaming and getting sucked into mud is so horrific that you don't have to. You can have characters joking and having a scene with that going on in the background and you not actually describing it terribly, and it's going to have a certain feeling. And so eventually some of what's happening in that book just hits that point. But the main character is so practical and chill and has a, well, what can we do? I had to keep myself from thinking about this funny thing that happened, like, and has a very chill, funny tone. And I like the main character. They're very interesting, but I wish they were in a different story. Like,
God damn it.
it's because I really li and the worst part is the main character's backstory is flipping great. It's so interesting. And this world that, like, because T. Kingfisher has basically invented a country called Galatia that this main character has come from, that has an army of that has sworn soldiers, which are eventually there was not enough men, and so they had to start letting women
Ooh.
into, and they get anyone who is a soldier gets different pronouns. You just get different pronouns. And this character was a sworn soldier, still uses those different pronouns, and it's just so. And I and every once in a while they talk about some of the horrific things that happened when they were an actual, like, soldier, and I'm like, that's the story you are made for. Like, that's your story. This, who put you in the fall of the House of Usher? I don't know why you're here. And so as much as what is happening, like, the actual stuff that's happening in that book is super creepy, but the atmosphere building up to it is just not that, because the character telling it to you is like, I like just so practical and kind of funny. And so
That was
that's
the
part
problem
of the
in
problem.
Eisenhorn as well, was that the main
Yes.
character just was so unaffected by everything going on that it just wasn't super like, and there was some atmosphere, but like it just wasn't as good as it could be. All right, that's I'm disappointed because I haven't started that one yet, but I was like, all right, because we read Nettle and Bone.
It's a really interesting story, but yeah, but
T.
you read Nettle
Kingfisher.
and Bone.
I read Nettle and Bone, and we were like, okay, this is half funny, half creepy. So I was like, all right, let's try to do her funny side, and that was Sword Heart. And then I was like, all right, let's try to do her creepy side, and that was going to be what Feasts the Dead. And apparently, no, she can never nail the tone. So that's it. She's no more. She's persona non grata on the channel from now
Yeah.
on.
But to pick an author who does atmosphere really well is Novik's Uprooted. That has some of the best, for me, atmosphere and building of a creepy thing. And part of it is the way the main character interacts with it, where it has the particular scary atmosphere has been something that she's had to live with. Like, and there's something terrifying of a group of people who live so close to something terrible and they manage to live their lives, but every once in a while the tragedy comes and strikes, and that on its own helps build, because the character is already afraid but practical about the fear. And the way she describes, I think if you want a really good idea, if you look at how the scene where they first go into the forest in Uprooted works, It is absolutely fantastic. And there's a point where they leave the area where the forest is and they go somewhere else. And there's a moment where the main character feels the forest's presence in the city far away. And it's just like.
And you have a moment where you're like, oh wow, it's gonna cover the entire world at some point, and there's that like dread involved. Yeah, there are actually a lot of books that have very good atmosphere. I was looking through our Yes, We Like Books playlist. And like, yeah, I think the character too is just such an important part of it, is how the character thinks. I mean, the yellow wallpaper is just about a woman in a room, and yet because it's in the viewpoint of a person whose sanity is fraying, the whole thing feels horrific. Horror movies aren't scary if the person isn't afraid of the monster. So yeah, it's basic. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what Will said before is using multiple senses to describe the thing is important. I think a lot of times what makes atmosphere fall flat, number one, character is not actually scared or does not feel it, or it doesn't feel like they're in the world where the things are happening. Like, it's like if you took a Marvel main character and threw them into the fall of the House of Usher, like,
Tony Stark doesn't work there, you're saying?
yeah. He just don't work there. But also, you need to describe it in a way. And this was a problem in the Nightbane, the Lightlark sequel. Everything was described, like it was described, but just so flatly with no set, like no richness, no depth. And honestly, I would love for Katie to take a stab at rewriting some of the more dramatic scenes in Lightlark, using the imagery that is there, but just showing how to like. Bump it up a
Punch
couple
it up.
notches, because of the way it's written and how flat the language is and how we're getting oftentimes just visual, like straight up, this is what it looked like, and not the like sound, the smell, the taste, the like the way like fear feels in your body. And it's another great example of atmosphere, Annihilation.
Oh, Annihilation is very good, yeah.
And the second book, if you want, like, again, like Will was saying, yellow wallpaper is just a woman in a room having issues with the wallpaper, but you're in her head. Similarly, a man crouched on a bench or on a shelf isn't actually that, but the way that author built up to that scene will just forever, and it's a calm, and that is also one where there is a force that, like, a alien monster force that has a presence that just pervades, especially in the second book, the entire thing. And because you're out of it, and it's even scarier than when you were in it. So those are two great examples if you really want to get a solid hot take on
Scorpio Races 2, both in terms of the scary scenes, but also just in terms of the windswept kind of desolate nature of the island, that's kind of run down a little bit, I thought was really excellent. Yeah, no, there are pretty much every book in our good Yes, We Like Books playlist is like that. Not all of them, but most of them. Like I would say, like the Keys to the Kingdom books didn't have great atmosphere per se, but they had like a decent atmosphere. Hold on. Question. Would you guys ever consider doing theme writing analysis videos, i.e., analyzing a scene you think has good atmosphere, good dialogue, good exposition? Yes, we would. We have on our
Team
Patreon.
streams.
Me and Katie do that. We broke down last time, I think, the horror horse scene from Scorpio Races, and like
Which is
that.
exactly what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, exactly. Did you watch that video or no?
No, not yet, but I would like to.
One of the fascinating things is she is able to make you so afraid and show the character so afraid without ever being like, and then fear coiled in her stomach, or she was scared. Like it's just through the things that are happening that you intuit how it is, and through the dialogue. And that's like really cool.
That's
She's
fantastic. And it,
that book is so good.
yeah, and I think going back to descriptions on that note, grounding the descriptions in not abstract terms,
That's what
but
I'm always talking
in,
about.
yeah,
Concrete.
concrete terms. So don't just say she was scared. What was, like, describe her body and that kind of stuff. And then the reader can go, oh shit, she's fucking terrified, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, go look at some of those books.
Okay. I think that's actually probably good for today. I think we're both winding down in energy, and there weren't like any other really good comments. Do you guys in the chat have any last comments that you had left earlier that we hadn't mentioned, or any other just final comments to talk about? Yeah, then that we will get out of here pretty soon. We'll still do the Dune review at some point. We might do it next week or the one after. I'm gonna have to shuffle around a bunch of the live streams and stuff. So if you're on the Patreon, you'll get a text about, or not a text, a an email about that. Also, instead of doing the live streams here for the channel as a whole, I've started doing some of them for just people who are on Patreon, but also not just the paid people on Patreon, but the free members as well. Me and Katie did a live stream of book to game adaptions. That was a lot of fun. That will eventually be released as a main channel, but if you want to interact with us during the live stream, go join the free tier of the Patreon. Because usually when we do channel live streams, that's where we'll be doing them. Because these feel like they need to be like a special occasion, I feel like, for the channel as a whole to get them. So over, because I don't know why, but like that's just kind of how it feels like.
Absolutely. I agree. Like a celebratory occasion.
Yeah, I'm
But
reading through these
Chantel,
too.
when's the next critique stream?
It may be tomorrow. I have it's it will probably be tomorrow. I need to check with Katie last minute today, but it will probably be tomorrow unless I get another
We have another one. Aaron Premet says, have you heard of Redeeming Love? And I have not. I shall
They said it
Google.
was like a Christian erotica before Twilight, I think they had mentioned earlier, which sounds crazy. Sorry, Rachel. Yeah, that's always happened. Somebody always pops in at like the last minute.
As we're about to end.
Yeah, what have been your favorite and least favorite you've done for the channel? I mean, least favorite for me is Song of Achilles, easy. Most favorite, I can't think of most favorite, but like Scorpio Races is in the top like three or four. I would
Yeah, I'm trying
definitely
to think
say.
of books that we read that I hadn't read before, which knocked off a
Yeah.
couple of really good, like Annihilation for me is, and it's also one of my favorite videos we've ever done, despite the fact that it's not very watched. But I also had read that before. So I honestly, Scorpio Races is super up there as a book. It is a near solid, like it's just a solid piece of like fiction, you know, that just is really good. Piranesi was also
Piranesi,
really
yes,
good, and I
excellent.
really enjoyed it. It was just such a good, fun read.
I will also say Sabriel, I enjoyed way more as an adult for this than I did as a child, weirdly enough. So that was something I'm very glad we relooked at. The Tamsin Muir books also excellent. So I
Oh,
can't think of
yeah.
one. Like again, I think the closest to a perfect book would be either like Sabriel or Scorpio Races,
Scorpio
just in terms of
Races.
they're not missing anything and there's no extraneous parts to kind of distract from. Like I liked the Kushiel books, but like there's a those books are really long and there's a bunch of
They're
stuff in them that
really, they
isn't really
are.
important.
And as we all know, I like tight stories with small scopes.
Not too
And
many things.
not too many things. And Scorpio Races and Sabriel have that. Worst book for me
I know it is.
What do you think?
Cyborg Tinkerer.
Oh, Cyborg Tinkerer, but also the last ACOTAR was really
Yeah,
painful
that
for
was real
me. It
painful to get through.
was really painful for me. The Titanic heist book was
It
pretty
was
not
so
good.
bad. Save Your Sister for me because the
Saviors
plot is just the construction of the plot is horrid.
Save Your Sister was also just one of the most painful ones to get through. Like it was just not enjoyable. Cyborg Tinkerer was super painful for me, but at least it was like it was so
Kind of
ridiculous. It was
funny.
a little fun. Like it
Yeah.
was funny in its stuff, where Save Your Sister was just like, ugh. I'm a little scared.
One, just to let you know, you're generally my favorite podcast. We've actually gotten a lot of comments like this, not to be like weird about it, but like I'm always surprised. I always say to Maria, like, oh, I did not know we were bringing light to so many people's drab lives. Like, it's so funny to me that people really like watching us.
I have so many comfort channels that I can't even imagine being somebody else's comfort channel, you know? Like there's so many where when the video gets posted, I'm like, fuck yeah. I know what I'm doing for the next
4 hour
hour and a
video
half.
essay.
And it just they make me so happy. And so to be that for other people has is honestly one of my favorite parts about doing this, especially because it's just me talking with my friends who I talk with anyway. And it's funny though, I call Katie and Will less because of the podcast, because we always have these weekly check-ins.
No,
There
it's
was a
nice. It's
couple.
my most social life, and I actually really miss it when I don't do a week of it, funnily enough. Chantel has said, will there be future watch along events in the future? I missed the last one. I think there might be. We always
I
think we want to
liked
do more
it.
things, and like we never get actually a chance to do it because we're all so busy. I think
So,
Katie has. Go ahead.
go.
No,
So
I
I
was.
like the idea of doing a watch along a lot because it's kind of low stakes. You don't really, outside of prepping the tech for it, I can just be like watch a movie and like having it be themed. So I was thinking for Halloween doing one, and then probably doing another Christmas one, and just like picking occasions, because I actually really enjoyed it as an experience of watching it with everyone. Like it was a lot of fun. It was super cozy and I liked it. It was great.
Me and Katie have talked about doing video game streams before. I think I might actually like push her into doing that. Or not push her because she would like to do it. I will push myself to do it. Yeah, watch alongs would be interesting. I actually had thought that we should do a watch along of the original Avatar: The Last Airbender now that the new one's coming out. I think that would be cool because I haven't watched it since the finale back in the day, and I was
Oh,
obsessed with
wow.
that show. I don't know why, but for some reason the finale was just like a capstone. I was like, okay, I'm done with that part of my life. Like, I love it and I still think of it very fondly, but I just don't rewatch it. So something like that I think would be interesting. I've wanted to do a watch along of the Game of Thrones and talk about how much I hate it, so maybe that would be kind of cool too. like Elden Ring. No, we would probably do more narrative focused games. There's one called Slay the Princess that I think would be so cool to do. But I want to do that one in person with her. Me and her had played a little bit of one called The Room or something like that, and then also Disco Elysium I think would be fun with her. More than anything because I want to interact with her more, and then you guys can be along for the ride. So, but yeah, movies. I think if you guys have any suggestions for ones you think would be really interesting, leave them in the Discord.
Yeah, that was and to explain what those who aren't part of the Patreon was, we just watched a movie together. And it wasn't even that many people. I think there was like eight patrons, and it was me, and I wanted to watch The Hogfather for Christmas because I just really like that movie, and I wanted, like, my house was all decorated and I was all cozy. And it was a lot of fun and it was a good time. It's long though, because it's not actually a movie. It's three 1 hour episodes. So it was
Yeah,
fun.
we didn't realize that till we got there, which was pretty funny. But no, even
Yeah.
I went in at the last minute and it was fun. It's cozy. But yeah, it just depends on how busy we are, 'cause Marie and Katie have like very real lives. And I have low social battery, so. Okay. All right. Thank you all for joining us. I may cut these up into their own short little 10-minute comment response videos. I'm not sure yet, but thank you for joining us again. Support independent journalism, and we love you all, our parasocial darlings.
Bye.
Okay.